Hello everyone, and welcome to this final talk dedicated to insurance and mobility. Yes, this is the last talk. We already discussed with Deloitte, with AXA Direct Assurance, and Willhof. And today I'm very pleased to welcome Pierre Stalabourdillon, Head of Group Motor and Mobility Partnerships at Generali, to chat about what's happening at the European level about insurance in the mobility sector. Hello, Pierre.
Hello, Vincent, and I'm really glad to be here with you.
Many thanks for having accepted our invitation to participate in our talk. Those talks are proposed by the Mobility Club, a private circle connecting corporates with startups and also helping them to analyze what's happening in terms of innovation in the mobility and smart cities industries. You are used to those talks now, and do not hesitate to use the chat bar on the right-hand side of your screen to present yourself, ask questions in the dedicated section. Pierre, before moving on the questions, I suggest you to introduce yourself and tell us more about your activity.
Yes, so thanks again, Vincent. So I will be very quick on this. So as you can probably hear from my accent, I'm French, but I've been living in Italy for quite a while, and I'm in charge for Generali of all the business development activities at group level for the motor mobility vertical. So to give you a grasp of the numbers that we have, so Generali is the largest insurer in continental Europe, with 70 billion euros of premiums, and motor is a 8 billion euro business for Generali. And so I'm in charge of especially, let's say, partnering with OEMs, car makers, fleet managers, new mobility players on insurance and services. And glad to be here.
Thank you. So yeah, let's move on to the first questions. Could you tell us more about the macro trends in the Europe for motor insurance?
Yes, I think it's a very pertinent question. So I think the right way of seeing it is dividing it between, let's say, the macro trends and then the impact for the insurance industry. So in terms of macro trends, I think we have a couple of them, one of which is the innovation in technology, so which means safer cars through the use of collision avoidance systems, the so-called ADAS. The second one is a rise of alternative mobility schemes, such as the growth of long-term rental, the growth of ride-hailing and car-sharing solutions, especially in urban areas, with a switch from ownership to car usage. The third thing, a third macro trend, is the availability of data. So cars are getting more and more connected. A few years ago, insurers were placing some aftermarket devices inside cars. The new frontier now is to use, let's say, smartphone as a device, or even better, to plug yourself directly to the embedded connectivity of the cars. And so to retrieve the data directly from the car in order to price it, to use it for the underwriting processes, to service better your customers. The fourth trend is the digitization of all the processes, which means that customers are used to a seamless digital experience. And so insurance players need to, let's say, convert their previous operating models to this new modus operandi. And the last thing is regulation, especially in Europe, which can be the ban of diesel vehicles in some cities, which can be the incentive schemes for the scrappage of vehicles, which obviously can accelerate or not, depends on the countries, the previous trends that we mentioned. So these are, let's say, the main trends. And these trends have an impact on the motor insurance industry. I think there are three trends I would like to mention with you. The first one is a downwards pressure on the insurance market size for motor insurance. So motor insurance should decrease in mature markets like Europe. So in Asia, the story is different, but in Europe, the size of the pie should decrease for two main reasons. The first one is a safer cars trend I mentioned before, which means a lower frequency. And the second one is a decreasing car park, especially because of, let's say, the trend from ownership to car usage. The second, let's say, impact on the insurance industry will be a shift from what is called retail personal lines to commercial lines. So you want, or you will insure less private vehicles and more fleets. Fleets is definitely, it's can encompass a lot of realities. So it goes from long-term rental to ride-hailing and car sharing. And the impact, so the foreseen impact of this is that right now we have a breakdown of 80-20, so 80 personal lines in motor insurance and 20 commercial insurance. And in 2030, we expect a 50-50 split. And the second impact related always the same theme, so to the shift from personal lines to commercial lines, is that we will go always more to a product liability insurance, because the fact that the car is always more connected and used by a fleet means that it will probably be more the algorithm of the fleet or of the car makers that will be insured more than the car as of today. The third, let's say, impact is a threat from non-traditional players. Why? Because the previous model is that you use historical data sets to price your customers. But the reality is that two people living in the same arrondissement in Paris and of the same age and of the same current bonus malus actually can have different risk profiles. And with the data that you collect from the car, that OEMs collect, that big tech companies can collect through Waze, Google Maps, to give an example, large telecom players, they have probably a better granular data to price the risk going forward than traditional insurance players. So again, I think the main impacts will be a downwards pressure on the overall size of the pie of motor insurance, a shift from personal lines to commercial lines, to fleet insurance, and the threat from non-insurance players such as OEMs, big tech, and telcos.
Okay, super interesting. So yeah, we clearly see that both from an innovation point of view, thanks to more technology capabilities into products, but also the ability to analyze different profiles are really reshaping the motor insurance market in Europe. You will talk about the data later, but could we focus maybe on the distribution and how is the distribution motor insurance evolving at the European level? I know that especially new entrants are innovating on this side.
Okay, that's definitely a topic of interest for me, and it's really what I'm doing on my day-to-day basis. So on distribution, the first, I think, change is related to the one I mentioned before. So the shift from personal line, so traditional retail, to a commercial line. Why? Because if it's a fleet that acquires the insurance or that packages it with, let's say, the financing, such as long-term rental companies, then it means that you need to get structured to answer to tenders and to the procurement processes of these growing fleet companies. Just as we talk about long-term rental companies, as insurance is a key part of the P&L, actually they have begun doing it in-house. So just to give you an example, so companies like Arval has set up a dedicated insurance company based in Ireland, which is called Greenval. LeasePlan has a similar setup in Ireland, and ALD as well. So large long-term rental companies are internalizing insurance. Mm. The second one regarding distribution is the rise of direct online insurance for personal lines. So all the, let's say, aggregators and pure online players that are growing, especially for the retail, so personal lines market, with, let's say, a very price-sensitive target. Just to highlight that on this fact, you have two kinds of players that are working in this field. The first one, let's say, traditional insurance companies that set up dedicated online companies, such as Gerardi does it, for instance, with Geneltel in Italy. Allianz has also dedicated company and AXA as well for online direct. But insurtech companies usually do not carry the risk directly. So they do what a so-called MGA. So they have the relationship with the client. They do the underwriting, but then the risk capacity is provided by someone else, so either an insurer, but in most cases, a reinsurer, such as Swiss Re or Munich Re. And so they usually operate not by carrying the risk, but by packaging it, and then someone else is carrying the risk. And the last, let's say, main trend on distribution is the fact that OEMs are distributing it directly. So at the point of sale, with the financing of the car, you usually get a proposal on insurance. The penetration of it is different from market to market. Italy, the US, and Japan are the markets with the highest penetration in terms of insurance intermediated by OEMs, but it's definitely a growing trend, especially as car dealers are looking for margins, and so they are highly incentivized to sell ancillary products.
Okay, super, super interesting. And maybe if we move on the data side, how can the data-driven approach can create both value for customers and insurers? And I would be super interested if you could provide us some examples regarding different geographies in Europe. We talked about all the telematics approach, especially in Italy. It would be nice to chat about it.
Definitely. So I think you first need to divide, let's say, a bit the value chain of insurance. The first part, let's say, is the quotation and the underwriting. And so having more data enables you to quote better the underlying risk. So again, the traditional models are based on demographics and previous claims history, usually with a bonus values system, such as in the majority of countries in Europe. But now you are going to a more granular data set that leverages telematics. So acceleration, cornering, driving style. When do you drive? Do you drive during the night or during the day? And then you are able to take this granular information and price it and include it in your underwriting, especially at the renewal phase, because if it's a first customer, it's more complicated to price. You are probably a bit obliged to use a traditional way of working. But if it's a renewal of a customer, you have a data set, especially through telematics, to price it better. So this is the first part of the value chain. The second one is when, unfortunately, there's an accident that happens and there's a claim that is that needs to be settled. So telematics and the data enables you to do what a so-called claim reconstruction. So you take all the data 30 seconds before the accident and 30 seconds after the accident, okay, and you are able to reconstruct the accident and the dynamics of the accident, the G-force of the accident, where was the impact, etc., etc. And this enables both to fight fraud and fraudulent cases, but also to liquidate claims much faster. And the third part of the value chain is all the services on top that you can create on top of it, because the data that we collect through telematics is not only interesting for us as an insurer, but can be also interesting for our customers. So the best example is fleet customers that usually would like to have some dashboards that show the utilization of the fleet, where are based their vehicles, having some geofencing, especially for rental car companies that do not want, I don't know, companies, cars to go to foreign countries or to recover, let's say, cars if stolen, and all the services that you can build on top through telematics. So fleet management services, dashboards, vehicle recovery in case of theft. So you can build a lot of value-added services on top of, let's say, the traditional offering. So I think these are, let's say, the main ways of using data, both for us as an insurer and for the benefit of the end client.
Okay, interesting. So yeah, we clearly see that the data-driven approach aims and helps in building better services, more personalized one, but also working on different use cases, which is super interesting. We have a question from Aja, from Flitter, about the MGAs. Actually, she has two questions. The first one being, do you believe that MGAs will boom in the motor industry? The second one is, and how do you explain that most MGAs, insurtech players, choose or start with home insurance and smaller insurance products, such as pets, bicycles, smartphone, etc.?
Well, it's a very good question. And I think the best answer, which is probably the obvious one, so I imagine that Azure probably knows it as well as I do, is the regulation. So unfortunately, or fortunately for incumbents, traditional insurance companies, motor insurance is a highly regulated business, which means that is that two things are complicated. First is to, let's say, to set up a company in that space, but also it's complicated to operate from another country. So passporting or freedom of service, which is very easy to do with home insurance and smaller insurance products, where you operate, I don't know, from the Netherlands in the whole of Europe, it's very complicated to do in motor insurance. And I think for these two reasons, so the fact that regulation on motor insurance is very complex, and second, that it's complicated to operate in freedom of service, means that it's a lower hanging fruit for insurtech companies to tackle, let's say, other business lines, because they can do it from one country in the EU and tackle all European countries, and because it's a less regulated business locally. So I think these two reasons are the why motor insurance for insurtech so far has been a bit less developed, even if we see some large insurtech players actually setting up MGAs and competing with us. I'm giving an example that is quite, there is, for instance, an insurtech in the UK that has quite an innovative approach, is that they are tackling unserved parts of the motor insurance. So for instance, they go on commercial fleet, which is a growing part of motor insurance, as I mentioned before. They go on gig economy workers that usually traditional players like us do not like to cover. The company question is called Zego. And so I think it's a good example of how you can, let's say, use an insurtech with a dedicated, let's say, targeting in order not to suffer from, let's say, the deep-pocketed competition from incumbents like us.
Okay, super. And and why do the most MGAs choose to start with smaller insurance products? I would say this is because what you mentioned. This is are looking for unserved markets.
No, I think on this one is the same. Is if you go for small ticket items or not heavily regulated business lines, you can operate in freedom of service, and by setting up one company in the Netherlands, you can already tackle pretty much all the countries in the European Union, which is a very different story when you do motor insurance, where it's probably possible to do freedom of service, but it's definitely much more complex. And so you probably would be obliged to have operations in all the countries of the EU if you want to operate in all of them, which is a different setup, again, if you tackle a smaller ticket items such as bicycles, smartphones, and so on and so forth.
Okay, Thank you so much. I don't think we have any other questions. So yeah, thank you so thank you, Pierre, for coming with the mobility talks, and thank you everyone for watching this talk. This was the last one of the semester. We'll come back by September with another super interesting topics to explore. Thank you so much for following this talk, and have a nice day, everyone. Thank you again, Pierre.
Thank you all. Cheers. Have a good day. Thank you.
Bye-bye.